Hill hits the heights at Thruxton and takes another double win. Ash gets his first of the season, and the word of the day is AeroWatch. This is the Thruxton Review.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. Thanks as ever for tuning or watching in. Yep, as Sam said there in the intro, the buzzword is AeroWatch. We've learnt what that means today. Not a word I was familiar with going into the weekend. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been a fantastic day here at Thruxton. First of all, are you well? Have you enjoyed the racing?
Yeah, it's been a good day of racing, and it's been a lot more exciting than I thought Thruxton would be, especially having the same hard tyre throughout the whole weekend. Hybrid has certainly played its part in stages, and there have been a few interesting decisions along the way.
Absolutely. A few bits of housekeeping before we go ahead. First of all, Bobby Thompson, after we recorded the preview, it was announced that Bobby Thompson would not be racing this weekend. Funding issues continue to blight him. Obviously, it goes without saying that we both wish him all the very best in getting back on the grid for Alton Park in a couple of weeks' time. I think it's criminal that a driver of his talent, who could step in like he did at Snetterton and take a podium and a really good performance, is struggling to get onto the grid. But these are hard times for everybody. Hope to see him back soon.
It baffles me slightly that WSR haven't stepped up, unless it is an absolutely massive amount, that they haven't stepped up and gone, yeah, we'll spot you in on this one.
Problem is, what do they get out of it, though? Look, he's not going to win the championship now.
I don't know.
He can't... Do you... Yeah, what do they realistically get out of it? That's the problem, isn't it?
The thing is, if he's in there and he's outperforming Morgan, and he outperforms Morgan consistently all season, that gives them a hell of a headache.
Well, there's a headache for next season, is it, when contracts come up for renewal? Yeah. Absolutely, I'd agree with you on that. Second bit of housekeeping is that we're doing a slightly different format today. We are on the sofa, as you can see.
Hello.
If you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening on audio, that's a sofa. We are recording slightly differently today. Say we are at home watching it, and we're going to do basically a live reaction record after each race and stitch it all together like Elmer the Elephant. So we're just trying out new things, trying to make sure we can A, get a streamlined process, but also make, hopefully, getting it out quicker, because also we don't lose a day of recording. So hopefully this will come out quicker than what it normally would do. But if you don't like the new format, or this particular format, make sure you comment, because obviously we want to do what's best, what suits everybody listening and watching along. But change is sometimes good. Just see what you think.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't feel too disjointed. But all the action started on Saturday with qualifying, and we'll get into that now.
Yep, so as usual, we have the A and the B format from FP2 times, and then we have the three qualifying sessions. So in Group A, as I'm going to call it, we had Watson, Sutton, Morgan, Cook, Ingram, Camish, Sumpton, Huff, Smiley and Pearson in Group A. To be honest, not a great deal happened in this session. Pearson, unfortunately, was unable to get out to set any form of lap in anger. A throttle issue meant that he didn't get out at all, which is a real shame for him. Obviously, he puts a lot of effort into getting the funding in place to be on the grid, and those kind of things they're just so frustrating. They're just, your whole weekend is almost over before it begins. For something like that as well, it's just really frustrating for him.
I think it's going to be quite gutting as well, because as we've mentioned in the preview, we're expecting the Hyundai to be nice and quick in a straight line. And as we'll go on to see, a couple of the other drivers in the Hyundai have done really well.
Yeah, absolutely. So conditions for this race, for this qualifying session, were slightly different to FP1. The cloud cover come over. It was a lot cooler. This meant the lap times were generally slower than what we'd seen in FP1 and FP2. This Group A was fairly uneventful. The only interesting thing was we saw a rare mistake from Ash Sutton where he pitted at the end of a hot lap. He thought there was a problem with the car. There wasn't. He said he was caught out because it felt slower and he hadn't quite put one, two and two together with the conditions. He also thought that the engineers had come in when actually the engineers said stay out and complete the lap. So a little bit of a breakdown of communication. However, to be fair to him, he got out with just over 2 minutes to go and banked a lap to get him through, which is the sign of a champion. Recovered quickly, didn't dwell on it, got himself straight back in the zone.
Pulls it out of the bag when he needs to as well. It's an unusual mistake, that sort of thing. We very rarely see that sort of thing happening.
We very rarely see drivers admit to that kind of
thing, to be
fair. But yeah, so the drivers that didn't make it through Group A, Sumpton, Huff, who was struggling with oversteer. I mean, he was basically Tokyo drifting round in this session. Chris Smiley, and I say Pearson, who never got out of the garage. So those are the drivers that failed to make it through Q1A. Those who did get through, just for the record, were Camish, Ingram, Cook, Morgan, Sutton and Watson. In Group B, We had the first real accident of the weekend. Aaron Taylor Smith lost it in a big way, smashing into the barriers at Noble at quite high speed. Thankfully for him, he went in rear first rather than front first, which meant he spun the car a couple of times. And remarkably, with the rear wheel at about a 45 degree angle, was able to crab it back to the pit lane, which was... A little bit was made about this in the commentary, was should that have been a red flag? Because whilst he was still getting the car back to the pits...
It was in a dangerous state, wasn't it?
And it was yellow, which meant nobody else could set a quick time. Yeah. So actually, should the decision have been taken out of his hands and it be red? It's a really difficult one, because either way, on the one hand, if the driver can get it back to the pit lane, keep his time and potentially go back out again, they should be afforded that chance. And we have complained in the past that the red flag is thrown far too quickly.
Yeah.
I remember, was it a couple of years ago, Chilton spun at Silverstone and literally he hadn't stopped spinning and the red flag was out. A little bit harsh. However, in this scenario with the damage, I don't know. I think either way you could argue it.
So, although I didn't watch all the qualifying, I have seen the highlights and I've seen this accident. And I think he's very lucky not to have done more damage than he did.
Oh, I agree.
And as you're probably about to go on and say, they had to get barrier repairs done, which meant that they were actually able to get the car back into, quote, one piece.
Yeah.
And get him back out for the session.
Well, he didn't go back out in that session, but he had made it through. So he'd set a time quicker. That's what he was trying to get to the pit for. Because, of course, if you cause a red flag, you lose your fastest time.
Yep.
And the way the format is now, you only really get one banker lap in. You might just about squeeze two in, but generally, if you're a front-wheel drive car, you only really get that one lap opportunity. So he was through. He'd got a time that was quick enough to go through. The cars that didn't make it through, Halstead, DeLion, Osborne, and Moffat, who has yet to get out of a Q1 this season, which is really interesting, particularly as, coming into the weekend, he's in the top 10 of the championship, which is really interesting, considering, I say, he's not got himself into... Q2 this season. So again, just for the record, those who went through were then Rowbottom, Chilton, Hill, Aaron Taylor-Smith, Dobble and Turkington. Turkington only just got through. He was struggling a little bit in this session. As you quite rightly said, the delay was then for Q2 while the barriers were repaired. This allowed, I don't know how, but the Powermax boys and girls were able to get Aaron Taylor-Smith back out. A phenomenal effort by the girls and boys in the team, because I looked at it and thought, there's got to be suspension damage, there's got to be brake bias damage, there's got to be probably a toe link gone.
With the wheel at that sort of angle, we always expect it's probably something like a toe link, but he went into the barrier pretty firmly as well. You'd have thought there would have been more wrong with the car.
Tracking, steering, all that kind of stuff, you'd have thought it would be out. But they did get him back out, which is credit to him. He wasn't able to start Q2, but as long as you're in the garage, and this is the key thing, they kept him, they did all the work in the garage on the stands, which meant he was presented for the start of the session, and therefore he was able to go out, which is, had he gone into the garage at any point, he would have counted as not being presented for the session, and therefore wouldn't have been able to take part. So,
which Huff knows all too well.
But that makes the repair even more impressive that they're doing it without putting it on the proper equipment. So fair play, a really good effort by the Powermax team. However, some questions were asked, should they be allowed to go out? Where's does the clerk of the course sign that off as race worthy? Lots of questions, but I think, to be fair, this is the first year of this type of format, and these teething problems only become, or these question marks only become obvious once an incident happens like this. Q2, the sun came out, so the lap times were generally starting to get a bit quicker. No real great news in this one, apart from Cook struggled. He didn't get out of this session. He did say that he was struggling this weekend with a shorter wheelbase and finding that the rotation in the technical parts of the circuit wasn't quite there for him. He wasn't able to get through. Turkington and Morgan both failed to get through the session as well. Turkington really struggling through the Saturday sessions to get the car where he wanted it to be. Morgan slightly more surprising given his history here. Dobbin and Aaron Taylor-Smith both out as well, along with Andrew Watson. Taylor-Smith, in his interview afterwards, said that he could have been quicker, perhaps not into the top six, but he feels he made a mistake. So the fact they got it out, and the fact they got it competitively out, is fantastic. So through to the top six, Ingram, Rowbottom, Sutton, Chilton, Cambridge and Hill. And I thought Rowbottom was going to take pole because he was incredibly quick in the first two sessions he was involved in.
Yeah.
And then came Q3, and he was looking good for pole until he kind of threw it away a little bit through the final chicane. And I think that slide he had from hitting the curb too hard and unsetting the car chucked him to a bit of a slide, dropped temps, and that's all you need to drop.
Yeah, because up until then he had two purple sectors and was looking right on the pace that he needed to be. I think you mentioned to me that he'd been fastest in his previous two sessions that he'd been in. And was sort of like the right driver to be on target for that pole position. But it wasn't to be.
No, as always, pole can only go to one man. It was for Tom Ingram, who through Church was a bit of an oil painting, to be honest. He was so on it this weekend, or sorry, in this session rather. And deserved pole. He had the biggest
cojones.
He did. I think he did say on Instagram afterwards that he needed a brown, a new pair of race overalls. But monumental effort to him with reduced hybrid, of course. Dan Camish second, Jake Hill third, Rowbottom could only manage fourth. Sutton, with his complete lack of hybrid, fifth. I think he's the only driver, I think, now who's made it through to Q3 in all sessions.
Yeah.
In all races, sorry. And Tom Chilton, proving your theory of the Hyundai engine being quite powerful, into sixth position, which was a good effort by him. And of course, it means you get an early point on the board for pole position, because you correctly predicted he would go Tom Ingram's way.
The cook side of things at Thruxton is not looking promising, is it?
The thing is that last year I'd written Cook off, because the Honda was awful last year, and he turns up and was it two podiums and was looking generally, and I thought, well, actually he's in a better car this year.
Yeah.
So but look, he said that the problems come with the wheelbase, and that is what it is. That's the niches of driving, I suppose.
Well, that's all qualifying done with. We shall now get into race one on Sunday. So then, race one on Sunday, as we mentioned, Ingram would be starting on pole, and if we haven't mentioned it enough already, all the drivers would be on the hard tyre for all three races this weekend, as it is always necessary at Thruxton due to the abrasiveness and the lack of use that the track gets, basically. It's very hard on its tyres.
As Mr. Dunlop rightly said.
If you watch the coverage on Sunday, you'll understand what that one's about. And it was Hill that got the best start.
Well, Hill got the best start versus Ingram got the worst start.
Awful
start. Yeah,
yes.
I don't think Hill's was actually that great. I mean, it's a good start, but I don't think it's that good a start insofar as it was made easier by the fact that Ingram just got loads of wheel spin and didn't move. Because Camish, I think, had a pretty good start himself. Yeah. And Hill, I think he reacted really quickly to notice that Ingram wasn't moving particularly quickly to get the car past Ingram into the middle.
Yeah, he was able to cut through both Ingram and Camish quite easily. And Ingram managed to actually drop down to fifth by the time we got to the first big braking zone into the complex. All three Napa cars had come past him, and we were wondering what was going on, really.
Yeah, I mean, I know that sometimes it can be a bit cliche or a bit boring, but it's race today. You just see where Sutton's so good. He just picks the path through. I mean, he's starting sixth on the grid, and he's up to third by the end of the first corner. He's just picked a line and just danced the car through.
It's split-second decisions as well, and it's just about making the right one at the right time and getting the right result.
Absolutely, that's why he's a four-time champion. It's that quick decision-making.
Yeah, there was some shuffling of positions on the opening lap. Ingram getting back past Rowbottom, out through the back of Noble and out the back of the circuit. So Ingram managed to recover one of those positions. And then as everyone filtered through the final chicane, Watson actually hit the tyre barrier going too wide into the second part of the chicane and launched it into the centre of the track.
Stupid place for a tyre barrier. It's a stupid place for a tyre barrier.
Yeah.
I get the ones on the outside because it stops you cutting the chicane. Yep. Even though, you know, you should be able to cut the chicane because in an emergency, what's better, but fine. But to have it on the inside is absolutely nonsensical. And I think, look, long-time listeners will know that we don't often agree with Tim Harvey, but I think he was absolutely spot on here. If you can't police track limits properly, because you won't invest or you can't invest in the technology to do so, putting a tyre stack there is not the answer. You're at the quickest circuit in the country. Even that part of the circuit's quick. This isn't a slow chicane in that way. It's just nonsensical.
A couple of pressure pads just under a car's width into the cut of that inside of both parts of the chicane will be more than enough to suit race directors and race officials as to whether people are cutting the corner or they're not.
Sam, it's on the end of the pit where you put a camera there and just have somebody who watches the camera all race. That's their job, is that they just watch the camera. I mean, yeah, it's... I don't overly like them on the outside part, but I understand it.
Yeah.
But this part, particularly as that sort of just before the entrance to the pits as well, it's nonsensical. And then the fact they put them back afterwards, really, yeah, I'm with Tim 100% on this. If you can't police it properly, don't police it at all, because that's just stupid.
So as a result, the safety car was deployed. As you say, that tyre bundle was put back in its place by one of the Manitous, and we spent a couple of laps under the safety car, and we would get restarted on lap 5. Now, Hill, interestingly, left this really late.
Mm.
I thought he would go much earlier, going down into the chicane, get that jump, but he waited until they got out of the chicane.
Yeah, I think he was hoping that if more carnage and cause were backing everybody up and they start tripping over themselves. I think maybe he gambled that Sutton's in a race and might come out and he might start fighting Camish. Yeah, I was slightly surprised how slow he was, and Camish did well not to go in the back of him a couple of times. But he controlled it really well, I thought. Camish did stick with him for about 5 yards, and then that was the end of that.
Yeah, it was Chilton who was the big loser on the restart, though. He got passed by a couple of drivers. It looked like it might have been three in the end, but he was really slow. He got pushed out wide on the restart, I think, by Robottom.
Robottom did really well, actually, because he read where everybody was going to go, and before the line, he positioned his car ready to overtake straight away. So he jumped to the inside of the circuit to a point where Chilton can't move back over because he'd lose too much speed off the restart. And it was a good race by Robottom, to be fair to him, who had lost out at the start quite significantly.
Yeah, so Chilton lost those positions, but would gradually gain them back throughout the race. And then everyone sort of like settled down into their natural rhythm.
It's the problem with Thruxton and why I've not liked it so much in the past, because once you get past the opening 5 laps or so, it does sort of settle until maybe the last 5 laps or so, if the tyres start to go off.
Yeah. Noticeably, Sutton and Turkington used all of their hybrid up. I know they only had 1 or 2 or 3 laps comparatively, but they'd used their hybrid up by 7 laps in. And we thought that may well become crucial towards the end of the race. Ingram then tried to attack Sutton. He was sitting in fourth at this point and had one extra lap of hybrid left. And coming out through to up to the final chicane, we thought, okay, he's got the run here. You could actually see on the replay camera of when he was on that hybrid and he got to his effective terminal velocity. He was already on the rev limiter halfway down that back straight. And I think that's probably the only reason that he wasn't able to finish the move on Sutton.
Yeah, and I think Sutton defended it quite well as well, because he kind of parked the car in the middle of the road and said, pick a side, mate, and then was able to defend it from there. He didn't defend too hard. He didn't attack himself too hard. He kind of just left the decision up to Ingram and would then react to it, which is probably the best way of going about it.
It was right on the limit from both of them, but completely fair.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Completely fair.
And Ingram had to settle back in behind going through the chicane.
Yeah, there's no hint of anything but fairness between the two of them there.
So tyre wear did start to take effect towards the end of the race, with drivers gradually dropping back into the clutches of others who had maybe saved their tyres, or front wheel drive against rear wheel drive. And it was also noticeable as hybrids were gradually running out and their allocations were dwindling, as gaps were closing and then opening back out to where drivers were using the hybrid and not using it. There was a meatball flag for Scott Sumpton. He was brought into the pits fairly late on with what looked like some front end damage. I don't know whether he clipped a tyre bundle. Didn't get a replay of it, unfortunately.
No, and it's worth just pointing out to people that we are doing it, recording slightly differently this weekend, that we are recording segments at the end of each race. So obviously, that may well become clearer on Monday, as it were. But at time of recording, I'm particularly unclear as to what the problem was.
Yeah, there will be, hopefully, like a social media roundup at the end of the podcast, along with any penalties that are given out over the weekend as well. But then Hill would go on to take his 15th race win of his career, fairly comfortably in the end.
Yeah, it was well over a second. He got the fastest lap, got the point for leading. Obviously, got the points for winning the race. Slightly disappointed in Camish that he didn't keep pace, but particularly the additional hybrid as well, I have to say. But I don't know, when Hill's got that BMW working, he is...
It's on rails, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on rails. He's very difficult to beat. We saw that at Snetter. We've seen that at times throughout his career, that once he gets that car in the sweet spot and it's where he wants it to be, he's very difficult to unseat. Race 2 is going to be really interesting, because obviously he's only going to have the smallest allocation of hybrids.
Yep.
Sutton will have more than he's had for a while, and of course he will be higher up the grid than he was in race 1. That is going to be interesting. I would imagine that Camish will probably be told or decide to let him through, should we say?
We did question the possibility of early tactics between the teams as to whether Camish was going to let Sutton through. But I think we might be right in the fact that in this second race, obviously the hybrid allocation will be swapped around and reversed. He may well be allowed or have enough about him to get through anyway.
I think he might have been allowed through in this one had Ingram not been so close. Obviously, Sutton said in his interview afterwards he was happy to settle for third. He didn't want to get into a scrap. And because Ingram was close, I don't think there's anywhere obvious that Camish could have let Sutton through without risking Ingram being involved as well.
Yes.
So I think Sutton... It was an interesting comment by Sutton because it's not the way he's done championships in the past. But he seems very content this year. I think he's all too aware of how the tyre rules and the hybrid rules are going to affect cars and people that actually... He might do well to do a Turkington where he maybe wins one race all year but wins the championship.
We'll start calling him Ash Turkington sometimes because he's not taking any unnecessary risks this year.
No.
And he, as he said in his interview, is more than happy to bank those points.
I think last year, though, with the car so dominant, I think because in some races he did take silly risks and put himself in a wall a couple of times, but I think he felt he had the car. Yeah, he was so far ahead of the rest of the field anyway. Because I think he is aware this year that actually...
Banking there's a fight
it.
On.
Yeah, top six every... I mean, look at Colin, who hasn't finished in the top six this race.
Yeah.
Hills had a non-finish and had a bad weekend at Brands Hatch. Didn't finish in the top six at the third race at Snetterton. That's slightly harsh given how good he was in race one and two. But the point is that Sutton just get a top six every single race or near as damned it, you'll probably win the championship.
Yep.
And that's, you know...
So then, to finalise the final order for race one, Hill from Camish, from Sutton, from Ingram... Rowbottom finished fifth ahead of Cook, Chilton, Morgan, Turkington. Aaron Taylor-Smith takes 10th.
And the independent win.
Dobble finishes 11th, taking the Jack Sears win in this race, followed by Huff, Watson, Moffitt and Pearson. Pearson obviously coming from the back of the grid.
Yeah, so it's all eyes forward for race two. Race two then, and the question on everybody's lips, not least Alan Gow's, was are we going to get another double race winner? Hill on pole with those starts, and he did get the best start of anybody. It wasn't as good this time round. Good start, but not a great start.
No, certainly wasn't. And a little bit further down the grid, I saw Turkington get almost looked like a jump, but we will confirm that.
In penalty corner.
It looks like a very good start if it wasn't.
What I would say is that normally that's dealt with in the race because it's cut and dry. Yeah. It either happens or it hasn't, and he wasn't penalised during the race, so I don't think there'll be anything on that. No. Sometimes the camera angles could look that way and a bit of heat haze or whatever. Sutton had another good start himself, into second with a really aggressive move on Camish into the complex. He was fired up for this race, I think it's fair to say. And I think he knew that his best chance of getting past Hill was if he could do it in the opening couple of laps while the BMW was still getting the tyres up to temperature. Obviously, we said before the race would be quite interesting because Hill clearly had a setup that worked for race one, so you wouldn't expect too much tweaking from him.
The same as at Snetterton where he said he plugged the setup in FP1 and used it all the way through. I don't think he's going to have changed much this weekend.
Whereas the cars behind will now have a bit more feel of where and how long the car can last around here and probably dialed it up. So that's certainly the Ingram Sutton in particular really had dialed up the car for this.
I think that they'll look directly into sort of like what tyre life they expect to be left on those tyres that have come off the car from race one, whether they can push those limits just that little bit more, because we've seen no punches yet across any series this weekend.
Absolutely. So, Hill out in front, Sutton chasing him down behind. Ingram rather, was having a fight with Dan Camish. And here's the big controversy.
That's it.
That's the word.
Go for that one.
Incident. Of the race, really, and probably of the weekend so far, is that Ingram cut the chicane to get past Dan Camish.
Yeah, so they were side by side going into the braking area, into the final chicane, and we know how tight and confined that is. And Ingram chose to bail out early, cut across, and straight line the first part of the chicane. But Camish tried to almost leave him the room to allow Ingram to come through with him, then went wide, crashed over the curbs in the second part, and consequently lost the position to Cook.
Now, you can look at that one of two ways. Ingram would say, well, he lost the position, I couldn't give him the place back because he'd already lost the position.
Yeah.
Camish could say, well, you don't cut the chicane in the first place. Mm. There probably was just about enough room. Mm. Then Ingram would argue back, well, if I do go over you and we contact and we crash, that's even worse, surely.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting one. I think it's going to be a good one for the stewards in the bus. I'm sure they'll be there as we record this, debating the pros and the cons of both arguments. I think Cambridge is right. It's an interesting precedent if we see the result stand as it is. I think Ingram, as I say, I don't really know what he can do. He can't give the place back. Could he bail earlier and not cut the chicane? It's really difficult.
Ultimately, and I know this shouldn't come into the stewards' thoughts or the stewards' minds, Ingram had the pace. He would have been past him, even if he'd had to give the position back. I think he'd have been past him and he'd have been well up the road.
But you are right, that is irrelevant.
But that is completely irrelevant to the decision that they've got to make on that individual matter.
I think what won't help Ingram, and I've got a horrible feeling he's going to be penalised, by the way, as we record this, is that later on in the race, we'll jump forward several laps here, Huff and Chilton had an incident at the chicane.
Yep.
Huff cut the chicane, gave Chilton the place back straight away. Now, different circumstances because they were racing just as those two. There were nothing behind. No. But, yeah, I'm interested to see which way that will go. And the way Tom gave his interview afterwards, I think he probably knows that he's going to be... There's going to be questions.
There are certainly going to be questions over it. I wonder whether they might resort to possibly even like a grid penalty for race three. And we'll see it decided between the end of race two and the start of race three. But yeah, it'll be an interesting one. And let us know your thoughts as well, because it's always good. There are always going to be incidents that have differences of opinion. Whether you're an Ingram fan, whether you're a Cambridge fan, whether you don't support either of them, I'm sure you're going to have a view on it.
I think you're right, actually. I think keep the win, because ultimately that he didn't win the race because of that incident.
No.
But maybe the three-place grid drop for race three.
Yeah.
That's probably about right.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. Watson was next. We had the big incident next. Off, fired off, lost his rear bumper. No idea what happened. No replay, no real mention of him. As soon as he was off and out the car, that was it. Everybody forgot that Watson ever existed.
Yeah, so coming through those first two sweeping corners, we saw those in the background. He was in the middle of the field and it looked like the rear end of the car had been ripped off. I'm assuming where he'd gone off onto the grass, been uneven and stuff like that. Because no other car we saw to be involved.
Perhaps we need to hire Mr. Holmes to work out what happened on that one.
Yep,
so that didn't cause a safety car hit. The car was in a safe enough space to carry on racing under no flags, which is absolutely fine. The top four were absolutely sort of dancing over the curbs and really on the limit and really had gone at the front.
They pulled a gap.
And it could have been any one of those four to win the race. It was, flip a coin in the air. We'll find out that way. Then we had sort of another big incident with Sutton, brown trouser moment is the only way of describing it really, at Goodwood, hit the curb too hard, rear of the car stepped out, catches the slide really well, but that had lost time to Hill, of course.
Yeah, it was really good car control by him, but as you say, he dropped back a good 3-4, maybe even 5 car lengths, which then put Ingram straight onto the back of him.
Although, by the end of the next lap, he'd caught that pace back up, probably possibly using the hybrid to get there, but Hill couldn't get away in this one. He couldn't eat the gap up like he had in the first race.
No, I don't think it was down to hybrid necessarily. I just think he was lacking a little bit of pace in this race, certainly compared to any tweaks that the other drivers had done.
Absolutely. And then Sutton kind of went for the big move, as it were. By the sound of it, clattered Hill quite hard through the complex and, as such, damaged the front splitter. Now, you got very excited because it looked like it might be a puncture first of the weekend. It wasn't.
Yeah, tyre smoke was dragging out from the side of the car and I thought, maybe. But no, you could actually see the front splitter flapping up and down underneath at high speed. And when you get that sort of aero disturbance, you lose a load of straight line speed and it was noticeable.
Yeah, and Ingram was straight through on that. The pace had come out of the car at that point. Obviously, Sutton was off the pedal trying to work out what the damage was. Is it still drivable? All of those kind of quick calculations. So Ingram was able to get through. Camish sat behind him for a couple of laps after that. And I'm a little bit surprised because there's a few things that you can argue here. One is, do you tell Camish, right, just rear guard while we work out what's what?
Yeah.
And let's see what we can do and then we'll make a decision. But in doing that, Cambridge is losing valuable time in getting after Ingram and Hill.
Yeah.
And Cambridge was quick. He had the fastest lap in the race.
Yeah.
So he was the quickest on the circuit. On the one hand, I get it. If Sutton's got a problem, rear guard him. Let's just work out what's what for the next couple of laps and we'll manage it from there. But,
It was a slow decision, wasn't it? I don't know whether there was a communication going on between obviously Sutton and Carosa, his engineer, working out what is going to be the best thing for them to do at that point. Whether Camish, as we know, you say, getting the fastest lap, whether he needs to go on and go and push towards taking more points off Sutton's rivals. With also the back or thought in the back of their mind that Robotons, they're challenging with Cook and could still then act as a rear guard.
Yeah, they relied on him getting past Cook.
Yes.
That was the problem there. But Camish did eventually go through, but he had a lot of ground to make up after that. That was the problem. So Sutton, as I say, started to just, you know, slow off a little bit. But while all this was going on, Ingram had caught Hill quite quickly, to be fair, and was right on the tail and making his presence known, shall we say, and would eventually get through with a really good pure power hybrid move. Now, there was a debate on the commentary. Was it a yellow flag? We don't think it was a yellow flag. We think it was a track slippery surface flag.
Yeah.
Certainly, obviously, we all know they have the dashboards now anyway, which would make, on the interior of the car, which will tell you what the flag is anyway. And there was no green flag afterwards. You wouldn't expect a green flag after a track slippy flag. So that all makes sense. I don't think there's any problems there. I just think on the telly it looked more yellow than it probably was.
Yeah. Tim Harvey's eyes are deceiving him in his old age.
Behind, this was a good race actually. We've seen some battles all through the field. So Dobble was in a nice battle with Moffat. He got past Moffat but then tumbled back down the order. We don't know why, how or where, because the camera wasn't there showing.
Pearson got well involved in that battle as well. Obviously him and Dobble trying to fight out for the Jack Sears win in this race as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw, as you say, some really good Jack Sears racing generally, and it's been a really interesting season, the Jack Sears so far. They're all fairly well matched. Well, half of them are fairly well matched. Yeah. But then people at Halstead are finishing races, and that's key as well, because Halstead isn't bottom of the Jack Sears, despite having missed two rounds, because he's finishing the races, and that is really important as well. Dobble with a really good move on Pearson, as I say, and then Cook started to fare a little bit more towards the front of the field. He started strongly, was looking pretty good, and looked like he might sort of be on the rear of the tail, the front tail, but as the race went on, the car just started to fade a little bit.
I must say, and it's not just his car, it seems like Toyota are really struggling this weekend as a whole. Yes, we'll get on to Huff had a little bit of battle with Chilton and managed to come out on top in that, but Watson wasn't particularly fast in race one. He fell down the grid and started to make a little bit of progress. Moffitt has been there or thereabouts on the real outskirts of the points, and they just don't seem to have any real pace this weekend.
No, setup problems maybe. I don't know, because it's not the first year they've ran at Thruxton. But drivers have driven these.
I wonder whether that is a big influence.
Yeah, quite because probably.
Cook obviously mentioned that he's used to running the Honda and had that on like shoestring.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that your Cooks and your Huffs and your Watsons, maybe slightly less so Moffat, are more precision drivers. Where obviously the data that Toyota are holder for Butcher and Collard, who are much more aggressive drivers and
ragged edge and
exactly that. As I say, Huff and Chilton were fighting, and we mentioned this previously that the chicane was cut and then the place given back. Yeah. Well, that's what you expect to see in that situation, albeit slightly different circumstances. Robottom then got through at Sutton on the chicane. Good move by Robottom. Sutton didn't really fight it. Again, I'm slightly surprised. I know it's early in the season, but with the greatest respects, Robottom's not going to fight for the championship.
No.
He's not in the manufacturer race, because it'll be Sutton and Camish that are the delegated point scorers. It's nice for Robottom, but there's no real purpose for that move. And I'm slightly surprised with, given that that's towards the latter stage of the race, that the call wasn't, you know what, we've only got a few more laps to go, hold station, let's just get Ash home and make sure it's, points, get him home. But maybe it's, team orders are a funny one. Some people absolutely hate them and think they should be banned, and they should never be allowed, because everyone should race, and if you put your teammate at the wall, and so be it. Other people realise that actually to win a championship, you need a little help from your friends, and it's a really difficult one. I'm saying this is the fourth meeting. Next week at Alton Park, we're halfway through the season.
Yep.
I'm slightly surprised that team orders aren't coming to play a little bit now, particularly given how close the front this championship's going to be. But
you kind of want to give all your drivers every opportunity, but you know that there are those top drivers in the team that are going to want to effectively pull rank as it comes towards the end of the season and ask for those favours and set them out in a way which will bring them to the close of the season in the best possible way.
Further behind, I think you've seen the move of the weekend, well, in the touring cars anyway, the minis. If you've not seen the, if you've not seen the mini sevens, make sure you go and watch that back on catch up. Because, but in terms of the touring cars, I think we saw the best move of the weekend from Huff on Chilton. Brilliant move around the outside into the final chicane, late braking, no chicane cutting, absolutely superb move. I said to you during the race, it's so good to have Huffy back in the championship. Yes, he's not running at the top, and yes, he's not a championship contender this year. He was never going to be. But to have some of that class back in the championship, you know, that it makes having a smaller grid more digestible when you have these real high-class drives that make you excited to watch the racing.
Yeah, it was almost a carbon copy of the move that he didn't quite pull off, but he was able to get it on the brakes well enough and actually make the move stick this time.
Absolutely. That pretty much summed up race two. Tom Ingram with his 30th win, so congratulations to him if he keeps it. Steward inquiry presumably pending. Jake Hill in second. He'll take that all day long.
Definitely. And possibly even another first.
It'd be quite funny, wouldn't it, if Toker and if he then gets another double win, but this time by default. That is quite funny. Perhaps we'll have double wins all year by one way or another. That's quite funny. Dan Camish third. Again, it's been a good weekend for Dan so far, but
you're a little disappointed, aren't you?
I just want a bit more. I just think in that race, I think he... But then I'll also say that perhaps he's got that slight defence that had he got past Sutton a couple of laps sooner, would he have then been able to go after Hill quicker? I don't know. That round out the top three, Robottom fourth, Sutton fifth, Cook sixth, Turkington, Morgan, Aaron Turner-Smith, Huff round out your top ten with Chilton, Pearson, Moffat, Dobble and Osborne. Good points for him. Hill now leads the championship by 3 points over Sutton and 5 points over Ingram, which is a change at the top.
Yeah, Turkington is 23 points back now, but we saw Hill have a big deficit, which he made up at Snetterton, and he could well do that once again if he needs to.
Yep, and then, of course, it's the reverse grid. That's the big question. And number eight was pulled this time by Tom Ingram, which means that Adam Morgan starts on pole, Colin Turkington alongside, who can claw back that point, going into race three. Cook will line up third on the grid, Sutton fourth, Robottom fifth, Camish sixth, Hill seventh, and Tingram eighth, presuming that's how race two order finishes.
But yeah, we'll get on to race three next.
So ahead of race number three, there was a slight amendment to the results, wasn't there?
Yes. So as we mentioned, there was a conflict of interest for one of the overtakes in race two that involved Ingram and Camish. Ingram was therefore penalised with a 2-position penalty on the final race standings for race two. This means that he would keep his race finish position for the reverse grid, so he would start in eighth. And he would also start with his only one lap of hybrid for race three. Interestingly, before race three started, Sutton's damage that he accrued during race two was slightly more extensive than they first believed.
Yeah, I mean, basically the damage to the splitter, which is a fairly easy change, is basically a piece of plywood that gets bolted to the bottom of the car. However, the damage, the impact had damaged the hybrid motor, so they had to completely refit it. However, the good thing about Napa being a very professional team and with the resources is that they've basically got front ends built and they just bolt a whole new front end on. By no means an easy job.
Nope.
It's time consuming, don't get me wrong. However, it wasn't a complete rebuild by putting every individual part on. It was a case of unbolting one bad front and bolting on this new subframe. But difficult under the time pressure nonetheless.
Yeah, apparently a cooler pipe had been dislodged and therefore the hybrid motor had overheated. So it's a fairly extensive change, considering the time frame that you have between races in a weekend. But consequently, they were able to get the car out ready for the formation lap. He was sitting on the grid and wanted to reward his colleagues and teammates and crew with the best possible result in race three.
Absolutely. And as you say, with the Ingram penalty, that meant Jake Hill inherited race two. So we have got, for the fourth time this season, a double race winner. So it's all going very well.
That's right.
That
we're
regard.
Not
going
to see any of those this season. Hang on.
Not here. No. And that also meant that Dan Camish finished second. We discussed at the end of race two whether they would allow Ingram to keep the win and reverse just his grid position. slightly surprised went for this option because it doesn't really benefit Cavendish that much. It brings him up a place, yes, but yeah. It also benefits Hill, who wasn't a party to the incident.
Yeah, I know.
So a little bit unsure. Ingram was very miffed by this. I have to say, we are Tom fans. I don't think he comes off particularly well in the interview about it, personally. I get he's miffed and I get he's annoyed. Perhaps don't stick a microphone under people's noses just after they found out some quite bad news, but I don't think he covered himself in glory, personally.
He referenced a couple of things that were being said in either briefings or meetings between teams and TOCA officials and stuff like that, and how rule books have been set out for this season and how much you have to be alongside. But I think we both still agree that he wasn't at any point in front and should have given the place back if it was possible.
And I think the difference is that Camish compromises himself.
Yes.
To try and keep Ingram from staying on the track. And Ingram, I'm going to sound quite harsh, it makes no effort to stay on the track.
Has to make that split-second decision, and that's the decision he made. Not aware that, obviously, Camish was going to leave that space, but...
I did think the comment along the lines of words, but obviously they want to have a crash then is a bit... Yeah, I don't think... Look, I really like Tom. I think he's a great guy. And I get in the heat at the moment, we all say stuff that isn't... But he didn't come off particularly well in several of the interviews this weekend. He just seems a bit irked by something.
He certainly took that into his mind going into race three, however.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So, race three started then. Morgan with the best start from the front of the grid, which consequently... didn't turn out as well as it could have done for him. Sutton had a lot of wheel spin off the line as well, and
I panicked. I assumed it was still damaged. I just thought
he messed it up.
Well, I didn't think it was a bad start. I mean, it was a bad start, but obviously I thought it was that them fix this. So the motor's burnt out. Yep. There's a lot of smoke from the because of the wheel spin. Yeah. I thought bloody hell, it's broken. It's broken. But there you go.
Yeah,
probably best I'm not a race engineer.
And then the first bit of controversy came into the complex where. Everyone was fighting for position. Turkington was gradually dropping down a couple of places and therefore got into an incident that involved him and Rowbottom.
Racing incident.
It's a racing incident, opening lap. It's a case of Turkington spins or Rowbottom gets pushed across the front of Turkington.
Turkington doesn't move the car.
Gets fired off.
Yeah, Turkington doesn't move the car. No. He keeps the car line astern and Rowbottom kind of goes across the front of him. I don't see anything that Colin can do there, to be honest with you. It's a first lap incident. I don't think that'll be reviewed afterwards.
Rowbottom goes off into the wall, but manages to get the car running again. So no safety car for that. And then it settled down fairly quickly, I thought. And people were trying to find their level. Hill and Ingram were looking to make progress, and they actually started to battle coming into the complex. And therefore, those two battling actually gave Aaron Taylor-Smith the best opportunity to nip past both of them.
Yep, sort of hand out the window. Thank you very much, lads. Yes. And, off we go.
Bye-bye.
Check out.
But yeah, so that was a good opportunistic move from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he did what he could there. Sutton then got past Camish with relative ease.
I think he was let past, personally.
Yeah. And he was the driver looking to go and hunt down the BMWs at the front. Moffitt had a high-speed spin. He was tagged by Chilton. Now, I think this is probably Moffitt moving back over when he isn't quite in front of the Hyundai.
Unfortunately, we haven't got replays this weekend. The button seems to have been forgotten or the rights weren't purchased, so we're all kind of a little bit blind. Apart from the only things we do get are the onboards, and actually the one time a rear-looking one might have been quite helpful, we got a front-facing one. So
yeah, the irony is... Moffitt's had a rear-facing camera full of replays this weekend.
And the one time it'd be actually useful.
Yeah.
Look, every weekend, as I say, they seem to find a way to shoot themselves in the foot. And this weekend is poor choice of camera on boards and absolutely no replays. We still don't know what happened to Andrew Watson in race two.
No.
We may never know what happened to Andrew Watson in race two. There's an incident at the end of the race that was quite serious, which we may never know the answers to. Yeah, this is supposed to be the top Premier Series, mate, and it's really frustrating.
So yeah, Moffitt had a big spin, went off onto the grass, but would recover back onto the track and get going again.
We will see in penalties after the weekend whether Chilton's to blame for that, because if he gets a penalty, he will be to blame for it. Yeah. But I'm with you. I'm with you on initial half replay. I think perhaps Moffitt did come across too soon, but yeah, it's hard to know.
Aaron Taylor-Smith was then repassed by Ingram and Hill. at the complex again, with a fairly comprehensive move. Once one of them went down the inside, the other one followed through quite quickly, and he was demoted back down to eighth then. De Leon had to come into the pits with the bonnet up. It was one of two visits to the pit lane in this race. I think some sort of intake or mechanical issue that he was having issues with, which is unfortunate because he'd been having an okay weekend. He'd been there or thereabouts with the other Cupra drivers and hadn't disgraced himself at a track that takes a lot of balls to go and drive around for the first time.
I was going to say, yeah, debut for him, yeah.
And then I thought we were watching race two once again because Huff pulled off exactly the same move that he did on Chilton in race two, almost to the letter, and it was inch perfect, wasn't it?
It just cut a pace, what I said in race two about having Huff back in the championship. Yeah, that would do.
Yeah,
that would do.
This consequently led to Chilton being almost in free fall through the grid.
Problem with the car.
And yeah, consequently stopped on circuit a little bit later with smoke pouring out from the inside. I don't know whether it was a case of there had been a fire or whether the extinguisher had gone off or whatever.
No replay, so we won't know.
No. In the meantime, Sutton managed to get past Cook, followed by Camish as well. Sutton seemed to open the door for every driver, and Camish just followed him.
Yeah, I would say this move is just about on the right line of fair.
It's crowbar opening, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a push to pass because he does have the nose down, yes. And Cook has left the door open. And I think by the time Cook moves across, he realises it's too late to defend because Sutton is there. However, that then makes it look a little bit like the doors, but as you say, been jimmied open by Sutton's nose. I think fair enough by both drivers. Cook could have pushed him on the grass at high speed and caused a real incident. I think he squeezed him a little bit and then realised that the game was up and Sutton was able to get through. I'd say just about on the
one.
Yeah, there is going to be contact on some moves.
One thing I must say though is I feel like Cook could have closed the door between Sutton getting through and then Camish following.
Possibly, but let's not forget at the speed of those corners. Yes. Anything that unsettles the car, it's then difficult to gather it back in.
Yeah.
And get yourself back in the rhythm. So I don't necessarily disagree, but we've seen how easily the cars are upset for these high-speed corners. So.
Turkington was soon to pass Cook as well in a fairly straightforward move, and it looked at this point that Cook was really struggling for pace. Yeah. I don't know whether the tyres had gone off or he picked up marbles or something like that.
Slight damage to the algorithm from the contact. You know, it was on the rear corner, so you set the tracking out a little bit. You know, toe link. Do you worry the toe link's gone? There's all these little things that you want to reassess, particularly on thruxing. So you're about to hang it 120 mile an hour around Church. You want to be sure that the car ain't broken.
Yeah. Hill and Ingram then also passed Cook into the final chicane, and at this point, Cook was really, really struggling. Which the Toyota, as we've already mentioned, has struggled all weekend.
Yeah, and this is what Ingram should have done in race two, because it all got quite bunched at this point. Yeah. And Ingram could have left the track, and he didn't, and there was a bit of contact between the three cars, but actually, that's probably what he should have done in race two. Yeah. Not to the point where he was suggesting in his interview that they have massive contact, fire each other off at speed, but actually, that is probably the best way. I would agree.
Yeah. Sutton was then able to get past on Morgan coming out of the complex with a nice cutback move.
What a move just this is.
Set Morgan up to be defensive through the middle part and then managed to get the overlap on the exit.
No contact. From the next corner, he's able to brake late on the apex, which keeps Morgan wide. Morgan now can't get back in. And I don't think this is a coincidence, by the way, and this allows Camish through. Yes, it's opportunity by Camish to realise what's happening, but I think Sutton knows what he's doing here. He doesn't run Morgan wide so he's off the track. He just makes sure there's no chance for Morgan to get back in on the line he's committed to, which allows Camish for it's brilliant racing.
He stunts his momentum, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just checks him up.
Yeah.
It's fantastic driving by. So no contact with Morgan at all either. Clean as a whistle. And it's one of those classic ones by Sutton where it's a cigarette paper across the back bumper sweep. And as overtakers go in this series, I'm not sure I've seen a better one than Ash Sutton. I really don't think I've seen a better overtake consistently.
Yes.
He does that move time and time and time to the millimetre. I've never seen him get it wrong. I mean, someone will be able to go, well, actually, at Croft in 2018, I think you'll find. But, yeah, for me, he's the greatest overtaker we've had in the series. Certainly in my lifetime watching the series.
Two laps later now, safety car is deployed.
This is bonkers. This is absolutely bonkers.
I knew this was going to trigger you.
It triggers me because Chilton's car hasn't moved for these two laps.
No.
They've covered it under yellows for those two laps. Now, okay, it's not ideal to have a corner covered by yellows on a live racing circuit for so long in the race. I get that.
Yeah.
But it's fairly obvious when both doors are open and Chilton's scarped to the bushes that he ain't going to be getting back in it to move, is it? It's not like Chilton sat in there going, okay, reset, power off, power back on, flick, flick, flick. Oh, it's got going again. The doors are open, it's smoking, and he's on his way back to the pit lane for a beer. It was
strange that the decision hadn't come earlier. Yeah. I don't know whether the marshals were trying to control if there was a fire there.
But even more reason to do it earlier. If there's a fire, to control that, even more reason to neutralise the race, surely.
Yeah. You'd think so, wouldn't you?
As you say, you're absolutely right. You let the marshals do the work first. I completely agree. And it's never the marshals' fault. They're not in charge of whether the safety car gets called or not. It's the clerk of the course. However, if that's the excuse, then surely you pull that decision earlier for them. If you
As I say, every weekend there's something at the minute, mate, and it's
safety car out on circuit, bunch the whole field back up once again. We went to a nice handy advert break, which I know you love as well.
Well, as the soapbox is out and I'm on my horse, all I will say is F1 is an hour and a half race generally. We don't go to breaks if there's a pause in the F1. This is a red flag, and even then we don't tend to go to a break.
Yeah,
and that's an hour and a half.
I know.
And they've paid more money to be on Sky.
Yeah.
It's a bit tin pot to be going to, not tin top, tin pot to be going to a break in the middle of a race.
And it's we poor. Almost missed the restart as well.
Yeah.
But at the restart, the Fords were definitely paying attention and escaped well up the road. And Camish knew that he shouldn't attack Sutton and they would just go away from the pack at that point.
Yeah, it was interesting. Of course, we had two safety cars today. And the first one in race two, Hill backed the pack up really quite far and then sort of kept checking up and going that way. And this one, Sutton didn't slow down at all. Obviously, slowed down for the safety car, but none of that. Just, right, we'll go then.
Yeah.
We'll just go. And as such, there was no chipping over behind at all, really. I mean, the gaps are quite huge for a safety car restart.
Ingram then went on to make his second pass at the chicane in this race in pretty much the same manner as the Huff and Chilton one. Was elbows out, managed to get that move done without obviously cutting across the chicane to make everything nice and safe. Hill managed to get past Turkington and Cook.
Turkington's lack of pace in the second half of the race was a mystery to me. Because particularly on the grid, how you were saying, the car's coming to me, it's my race car now, I feel really good.
Mm-hmm. And then Cook's car picked back up after the safety car. It was really strange how his car went through peaks and troughs in that race.
Yeah, again, part of that's probably him learning the car at this track. I think part of it, again, is that you under the safety car, when it's slow, you can do the checks on the car to make sure things are right, and you can build your confidence back up that actually the car isn't it's fine to operate. Also, at the moment, it's got a bit hot running in the pack.
Cool
it down under the safety car, get the temps down. And these cars are brilliant, but they are very, very fragile. As you see with Sutton in race two, that it looks innocuous and there's a lot more. So.
And then we probably come to the biggest talking point of race three, involving Ingram once again and a BMW, Morgan this time. And he goes to make the same move that he'd done on Turkington and that he'd done earlier in the race. And he's the last of the late breakers. You can see the car physically dip after Morgan has jabbed the brakes on. But then, Morgan has rolled off the brakes, lost that back end slightly and turned into Ingram. He's turned left into a right-hander.
It's poor by Morgan.
And Ingram has nowhere to go. Has to cut across.
Yeah, he has to cut the chicane here. He's ahead for a start, which is a big difference to the one in race two. I think it's a bit poor for Morgan, really. There's more enough space not to do that.
Mm.
It does look very much, you might be right with the car losing the end, etc.
I can only think that it is a little bit of like lift off oversteer he's trying to regain that ground that he's lost in the braking.
Because on the cameras, it looks like he's deliberately steered into Ingram, which you'd like to think isn't the case.
No.
But it's not a good look from Morgan. And you're absolutely right. I thought Ingram was a bit arsy about this in the interview after the race as well, about he's going to lose, see what they say about this one, etc. Mm. But there's a very big difference between that one and the one before. I don't think anyone... The first one, I think, depends what hat you wear to how you argue it.
Yeah.
It could go either way. I think the penalty is strange, but I think it's fair enough that there is a penalty, even if it's a bit strange. This one, I think, it's clear-cut. That's when you would shortcut the chicane. I don't think there'll be any penalty for that.
On to the final point of the race. Halstead has had quite a large accident, it seems, coming into his final lap.
Yeah.
And at this point, a lot of the front runners are coming round to finish their final lap. So all we've seen is a split-second screenshot of him sitting there with half the car destroyed.
On one side, yeah.
He looks like he's running to some Arco barrier.
Yeah.
Without any, tyre wall or anything there. It's made quite a mess of the car.
Yeah, it looks awful. Obviously, at the time of recording, we assume he's okay. We hope he is okay. Replay would have been helpful. Maybe there'll be one shown after the F4s. We'll find out once that coverage finishes. Assuming they put Mr. Bean back on ITV4. We don't cut to shots of Teddy. But, not a good end to the race for Halstead, particularly after I said in race two that he's doing quite a good job of finishing the races, which is important for the Jack Sears, obviously.
Of course, it may not have been his fault.
We don't know.
A mechanical issue, may have a puncture.
Because you've missed in this little round of patches, Robottom did have a puncture in this race, which means that at time of recording, there's been officially one puncture across the touring car weekend.
Yeah.
Obviously, Halstead could have had a puncture, which has led to a tyre failure, or we don't, at this point, we just don't know.
But Sutton did come home to take his 40th win in the touring cars with some ease as well. And he certainly looked very happy and pleased to bring it home for the team.
What's crazy about that stat is that he's only got 10 more than it, 11 more than Ingram now.
Yeah.
But he's got four times the championships of Ingram. Yes. It's funny how these things go. But I suppose Jason Plate was the greatest example, isn't he? Who's got a number that probably would never be beaten.
Mm.
Unless Ash wants to sit around for the next 10, 20 years in the sport, but only two titles. So
I know.
It's funny how it goes.
So the top 15 finished as follows. Sutton from Camish from Ingram, obviously pending any
decisions. I really can't see any decision on that one.
From Morgan, from Hill, from Cook, Turkerton, Aaron Taylor-Smith, Rob Half, Pearson, Dobble, Watson, Osborne, Smiley and Moffat.
All of this means that Ash Sutton leaves Thruxton where he began, top of the championship, albeit with a shorter advantage now. Jake Hill, 6 points behind. And I have to say, it just ebbs and flows, doesn't it? A couple of weeks ago, we were thinking it's Hill too far back. We're now probably thinking it's Turkerton too far back.
Turkerton's, 30-odd points behind at least now. And with Camish's good weekend, he's only 40 points behind.
But we're coming up to tracks where Colin goes well. Alton Park and Croft are two tracks that traditionally BMW Alton generally go well anyway.
Yep.
Colin is the king of Croft.
Wow.
Although Sutton's pretty good there as well. Maybe not in recent years.
Hill's going to have something to say about that.
But these are two BMW tracks, and they'll be in the. We're in the British summertime.
Allegedly.
As the thunder rolls by. but you presume they'll be. Warm days, which suits the BMW. So this championship really is ebbing and flowing. And then you take into Alton Park the fast parts where that Hyundai grunt should come into play. Yep. You then put in the technical bits where the Ford seems to have the advantage in the slower technical corner. So it's a really fascinating championship. Before we move on to our driver of the weekend and our villain of the weekend and all the predictions and stuff like that, you join me in a penalty corner to discuss the penalties from Thruxton. So first off the bat, Aaron Taylor-Smith did receive a formal reprimand for the way he drove in qualifying. One assumes that's for the way he dragged the car back to the pit lane. It was deemed to be potentially dangerous to others. So make of that what you will. And then in race one, Dan Rowbottom, as we said in the review, received a two-place penalty during round 10 for gaining an unfair advantage with an incident with Tom Chilton. That was on the restart. Obviously, Rowbottom had got the car ready for the overtake straight off the restart. Apparently you can't do that, so that's a two-place penalty for him there. And in race two, obviously, if you haven't heard it by now, Ingram had a two-place grid penalty for the incident with Dan Camish. He left the track and gained an advantage. I think we've discussed that pretty fairly extensively in the podcast itself. And also, one that didn't get picked up on the cameras, Ronan Pearson received a one-place penalty for gaining an unfair advantage whilst leaving the track with Aidan Moffat. Those are the penalties, which of course means that Tom Ingram does keep his podium for race three. Probably the right call. Well, I think definitely the right call. What do you guys think?
Yeah, shall we get straight into our awards then for the weekend? And obviously this is pending any further decisions that may be made. We will add a little bit in at the end if anything big comes of any news between now and release. Your driver of the weekend.
Yeah, it's a bit strange because I've been a little bit down in, but if you take three podiums... and you qualify in the top six, I think Kamish has to be the driver of the weekend. I think Sutton has got a claim, to be fair. I think what he's doing with the lack of hybrid is really good. I would say that the contact in race two probably hurts him down a little bit because it was unnecessary contact with Hill to a large degree. I think Kamish could have perhaps hunted a little bit better in these, but he's come away with, 3 seconds?
Yeah. Which, this is not a bad weekend,
Is it? Okay, he gets promoted to second in race three, but, I mean, 3 seconds isn't bad, is it?
Yeah, not at all.
So,
I have to go for Hill.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I wasn't quite expecting this speed, and he's just carried on the form from Snett. Taking two wins, yes, only one of those was on the road, I know. But then also being nice and strong and firm in race three and qualifying pretty well as well.
Yeah, obviously he's cut the gap really well. I wouldn't argue massively against it, no.
Your villain?
I go for Toyota. I mean, obviously, yeah, Cookie's obviously the king of Crofton. King of Thruxton, sorry. And I get that he's got to get used to the car, etc. But with four of them, and I mean, Watson had an absolute stinker. Not necessarily his fault, we may never know. Huff got the car wrong, or the car was set up wrong in quali, and that's put him on the back foot from the start. Moffat had no pace this weekend, and Cook was the best of a bad bunch, but really ebbed and flowed. So I was expecting at least a podium for Cook at Thruxton. Because even in the dark days of the Honda last year, which didn't really work well, he still performed the Thruxton. So
I follow you on that route, but I think Moffitt was possibly the worst. I think Watson was a little bit unlucky. When Watson was there, he was still making progress back through the field.
Yeah, and obviously the tyre barrier race one's not really his, well, it's his fault, but it's stupid.
Whereas Moffitt has had that spin in race three, which I think is probably his fault.
TBC, but
he's gone out again in the first part of qualifying.
Yeah, I can't argue that point.
And he's picked up 2-3 points this weekend most.
It's not been a good weekend.
It's a poor weekend for a driver that's won a race this season.
Yeah. It's fair.
Your surprise good then?
I'll go around Taylor Smith. I think we thought that the Toker engine might struggle a little bit here. And I think it did, particularly in the Cooperas. But actually, Taylor Smith, he gets to Q2, which is always important. He's not far off from getting up. He wasn't really going to be close to Q3, but to get the car back out and put a decent lap in after what happened in Q1, that's pretty good. And actually, he's come away with 3 points finishes, 3 independent trophy wins. And okay, you can say, well, who's he up against? Well, you've still got to win them. And I kind of thought the Vauxhall might struggle a bit this weekend. Has he got 3 top tens?
He might have just missed out on one.
But he's had at least 2 top 10 finishes. Yeah. And he's battled amongst the front end cars this weekend as well. So, I'm going to Taylor Smith.
I was pleasantly surprised by Kamish this weekend. As you've already mentioned, for him being your driver of the day, to take 3 podiums at Thruxton as well, which is a high commitment circuit. You need to have a really good car underneath you. And he's only 40 points off the lead of the championship now, which I think he would probably take considering the start of the season that he's had.
I think the only problem with that, and I agree with you, but I think that you've got to have 4 people have off days for you to really get back into this. They will all have off days at some point, but to really get back into it, they're all going to have one probably at the same weekend, which doesn't feel likely.
No. You're surprised bad then?
I'm going Turkington. I think he was comfortably the worst of the rear-wheel drive cars this weekend, albeit it was only 3 with no Thompson, as we discussed earlier. Slap pace all weekend. Race 3, I think, is the real clincher for me, that you're on the front row of the grid. You've got a fast starting car. You've got Morgan alongside you, who you are on paper better than. Didn't make a dent at all. Just went backwards and backwards and backwards.
Both of us said before that race started, he should be the one to win this. Turkington.
I still said I thought Sutton would do it, but
you definitely said Turkington.
But you're right. Turkington was the absolute safe bet. And race 3 in particular, just race 1 made very little progress. Race 2, he seemed a little bit better, but he didn't get amazing progress through the field. And you look at what Jake Hill's doing in his BMW, who's taken 3 top 6s this weekend, including 2 podiums. That's why, and it's crazy because you go back 10 years, this weekend for Turkington's not a bad one in terms of championship, but now you really do need to be doing what Hill and Sutton are doing, which is, and Ingram to be fair, which is to 3 top 6s are basically the minimum now.
Yeah.
And he's just off it.
My surprise bad is going to be Tom Chilton. His highlight of the weekend was getting into Q3 and qualifying, and then it's just gradually slid downhill from there. And just everything compounded it in the final race where he had to retire. Unfortunately going backwards, which is not what you want for a weekend.
Dare I say I'm slightly disappointed in Hyundai overall from what was a strong potential Saturday into what's transpired. Obviously the Pearson thing hasn't helped. Halstead was off the pace and Chilton's just seems to completely lack the race pace today.
Yeah. Right then. We'll finish up with our predictions.
Yep.
Obviously, we picked our predictions for the weekend. We had pole position, which I managed to take home.
You did, I can't argue it. Ingram, well done.
An Ingram pole there. Obviously, Cook, you thought would go a lot better, has failed.
Yeah. We did get a pole. It's what it is.
But you did make it up on race winners, didn't you?
I did. I had two today. I went for Hill and Sutton, who obviously both scored points. I also went for Cook, which...
Partway through the day, you'd forgotten about it. You'd gone for Hill.
I thought I'd gone for somebody else, so I was quite happy with that. The Cook one was obligatory, really. It's Cook at Thrux. Yeah. You'd be silly not to. It's like, when we get to Croft, you best believe Turkington's getting a race win on my predictions. it's just what happens.
I was annoyed with mine. The fact that Morgan starts on pole for race three.
Yeah.
Ingram gets the win taken away from him. I can understand why it's taken away from him, but obviously it
doesn't help you.
Counts against that.
I don't think Toke have considered that.
No, they haven't.
There's a trophy on the line for us here.
And then, as I said in the preview, you went for Osborne, I went for Dobble, and I said it's the only weekend I haven't gone for Pearson.
He'll do it.
And he picks up a Jack Sears
trophy. I must admit, actually, I'm a bit disappointed with Osborne. Had a bit of a nothing weekend as well. I mean, he's not mixing it enough with the Jack Sears races at the moment. And I think Dobble. It's between Dobbin and Pearson.
Yeah.
Osborne's got a lot more experience in this series than those two. He should... Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed.
Yep. So, on to our general predictions then.
Yeah.
Mine, first of all. Cook was the top-scoring Toyota, although they all pretty much flattered to deceive. Aaron Taylor-Smith missed out on top six, which was a bit of a far-flung prediction anyway.
When they... Yeah, in race trim, yes. Yeah.
And then, obviously, I was looking for a DNF for one of the top four drivers, which didn't happen because they all finished inside the top 10 in every single race.
They sure did. Obviously, I went for a robot chart score Chilton, which happened. Only just. It was quite a nice little interesting one, that one, but here's a point for me. I went for BMW on the podium for each race. Now, at the time of recording, that's not happened. I don't think it will change. I don't think Ingram will have to give that place back to Morgan. I'd be astounded if he does. I'd be cross if he does, to be fair, even though it would give me a point. So I don't get a point for that, which is a shame, because I got two out of three races.
I think if that does happen, you should nobly not take that
point. Well, no, it's not my fault that Toker made the decision, is it? So, and then I went for one of the top four drivers to finish outside the top 10. Now, Turkington nearly did that in race one for me, and there was a point in race three where I thought, okay. But alas, they all finished inside the top 10, so it is only... 1 point for me on that one, which is the robot mouse scores Chilton. But in the puncture stakes,
currently it is just the one puncture, and that was Rowbottom in race three, which does give you 1 point at the moment. Obviously, we'll see if Halstead's accident was caused by a puncture or not. I think maximum probably only going to be two.
I can't see you getting to your five.
No, nor can I. But let's hope it only stays at one, so you only take the 1 point. But if that is the case, it means that you lead now by 2 points, 14 points to 12.
Yeah, and it could stretch as far as 16 to 12, of course.
Yeah, we don't think about that.
I'm very much thinking about that.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts and feelings on the weekend. It's been an exciting race.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been a really good weekend, I think. Race one was a little bit, but I think one thing we didn't really consider so much in the preview was that each year, Goodyear basically make a whole new tyre for this event.
Yeah.
And the first race is very much getting the feel of that tyre and feeling out the car and the setup, etc. I think that did show a little bit in race one. But race two and three were absolutely superb. And look, I keep saying it, this championship is going to be so exciting. We're four rounds in, it's 6 points at the top. Sutton had basically won it by this point last year. Let's be frank. He's only taken his first win 12 races in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm fascinated. I can't wait for Alton Park in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. Until then, do go and subscribe to all of our social media if you haven't done it already. Remember to like this video or audio if you're listening to us on an audio platform. And don't forget to get that bell on YouTube. We love hearing all your comments and reading through them all. And we will see you again once more for Alton.
Biscuits are good. If anybody out there working in biscuits is watching, listening, we could be persuaded. That's probably quite a good debate, to be fair, as we get ready to record the aftermath of race two. What is the best biscuit? It's very British. But yeah, the Vitties, anybody really. I'm not loyal. I have any biscuit. Get in touch.